You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In the immediate aftermath of the financial crisis of 2008-2009, some Wall Street firms warned that employees should avoid wearing clothing bearing the company logo. According to one poll, over 8 years later, Bank of America and Wells Fargo remain among the most hated companies in the United States. But in Why Wall Street Matters, former mergers and acquisitions banker William Cohn argues that banking and finance are widely misunderstood and are essential to a strong American economy. His book is published by Random House, and I'm very pleased it has brought William Cohn back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Leonard. Always a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into your book, NPR interviewed you yesterday about the firing of Preet Bharara. Before he took office, Donald Trump reportedly asked Bharara to stay on. Do we have any idea of why President Trump has changed his mind, although we've been hearing all sorts of rumors?
Yeah, there are a lot of great theories. I love this story because it's so out of character for Preet Bharara to be, A, tweeting and to be sort of standing up to the President of the United States. I think Preet had always told me that he did not have political ambition, even though he'd be a fabulous candidate. He was not a perfect U.S. attorney. There are some flaws. We could get into that. But
Can you name one who doesn't have some flaws?
No, everybody has flaws, thank the good Lord. I think he would be a fabulous political candidate, though. But he's always said to me that he wanted to just stay being a U.S. attorney in the Southern District. And he cited to me the example of a U.S. attorney from Maryland who Barack Obama kept on after the George Bush administration. So that seemed to be his sole ambition, so he claimed. And he thought he had a deal with Donald Trump to do that. And it turned out that he didn't.
It's been suggested that one of the reasons is that Wall Street has repeatedly been targeted in investigations by the U.S. attorney, although some give him a mixed grade.
Oh, well, again, this is one of the areas that I feel strongly that Preet Bharara let us all down, which was that he did not, and I emphasize, did not prosecute Wall Street when he should have and could have, and we all wanted him to. There was plenty of wrongdoing on Wall Street.
Cohen had never...
Well, I'm not even talking about hedge fund managers. I mean, he and insider trading, which he did a fabulous job at. I mean, or you know, he almost had a flawless record. He had some setbacks recently and turnarounds, which I think he got too aggressive. But he never prosecuted the wrongdoing on Wall Street, qua Wall Street, i.e., the people who brought us the 2008 financial crisis.
The Trump administration proposed delaying the fiduciary rule, which would raise some investment advice standards. What effect would that change have?
I mean, it's incredible to me that financial advisors, who are a part of Wall Street, people who manage other people's money, are not already obligated to do something that's solely in the best interest of their clients. I mean, how hard is that to agree to do? I mean, can you imagine managing someone else's money and not doing something in their best interest? So the fact that the Trump administration is willing to abandon that rule, we'll see how far they get on that, is just absolutely ridiculous.
Wasn't the president a critic of Wall Street during the campaign last year, along with Bernie Sanders and at times Hillary Clinton?
Well, then that's very much what caused me to write this book. I mean, everybody on both sides of the political aisle is exploiting Wall Street for their own political gain. And I thought, hold on here, wait a minute. Let's just remember what Wall Street's all about.
So you felt that you had to write this book because some of these criticisms are mistaken, misunderstand how Wall Street works?
Well, that is for sure. I mean, and Wall Street, by the way, does a terrible job at explaining itself. It likes to pretend of itself as sort of a big black box that nobody can possibly understand or peer into. That's a big mistake. They need to go back to PR school 101. But the catalyst for me was Antonio Weiss, and I don't know if you remember Antonio or the story of Antonio Weiss. He was head of investment banking at Lazard, a firm that I worked at. And a couple of years ago, he wanted to go become Undersecretary of the Treasury. And he was nominated by President Obama. That means he was fully vetted. His politics were in sync. He happens to be progressive. He used to be the publisher of the Paris Review before he went into investment banking. And Elizabeth Warren, who at that point had a very big megaphone, would not even meet with him. And so as a result, his nomination floundered. He withdrew it, and he ended up being a counselor to the Treasury Secretary. So he did serve, but not in the same job, not in a confirmable job that he needed to be in. And so that just really irritated me, and I felt we had to have people – if understand what Wall Street's all about. It can't just be a punchline or vilified.
And you write that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have no sense of how Wall Street works. What did they get wrong?
Pretty much everything. I mean, in the case of Bernie, I mean, I can almost understand it. He was mayor of, you know, Burlington, Vermont, and he's been in the Senate. I mean, why would he ever know a thing or two about Wall Street? Elizabeth Warren, last time I checked, before she was a senator from Massachusetts, was a bankruptcy professor at Harvard Law School. If you teach bankruptcy, and I did restructuring work in bankruptcy for years at Lazard, it is the most complex. It gives you the most complex and thorough understanding about how Wall Street works, because you basically have to understand how all the securities that Wall Street creates need to be taken apart and put back together. And for her to teach that without understanding Wall Street actually defies logic. So either she's unqualified to teach at Harvard Law School, or she's being incredibly cynical by pretending not to understand Wall Street.
But in light of some of the problems of the past, who does understand it and whom can we trust?
Well, I mean, there are people who are obviously understand how Wall Street works, and many of them work on Wall Street, and many of them write about Wall Street. I mean,
aren't they all going to be in the new cabinet?
A lot of them already are, which is frankly a surprise given how critical Trump was of Wall Street. I mean, if you think about it, but not only was Trump, but Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, everybody was criticizing Wall Street. I think that, you know, people, I mean, like somebody like an Eliot Spitzer, who, of course, was former governor of New York and U.S. Attorney General of New York State. He is a guy who completely understands Wall Street and its ins and outs, and he would be a perfect kind of a person to explain Wall Street, except, you know, we no longer, you know, share a love for Eliot Spitzer that we once did.
And, well, for other reasons.
For other reasons, right.
Personal reasons.
Exactly. And I think Wall Street does a terrible job of explaining itself. And frankly, I've been very critical. You've had me here. We've talked very critically about Wall Street in the past. And it got to the point where, okay, somebody has to actually remind the American people what Wall Street does that's right.
My guest is William D. Cohn, C-O-H-A-N, as in the name of the famous composer. His book, Why Wall Street Matters, is published by Random House. So what counts as Wall Street nowadays? The banks in Lower Manhattan, hedge funds, firms like AIG, G Capital, GMAC, the General Motors Acceptance Corporation?
All of it and more. The only thing that doesn't count for Wall Street anymore, basically, is Wall Street itself, which is a street in Lower Manhattan that's actually a Disney set now. I feel like it's a stagecraft now. It could literally be a scene out of a Broadway show. There's only one Wall Street bank on Wall Street now, and that's Deutsche Bank. It's not even an American bank. It's the U.S. securities arm of a big German bank.
And all the others have moved off?
Well, Goldman is on the other side of the World Trade Center now, and everyone else mostly is in Midtown.
GMAC was founded in 1919. What's changed for it or others in the past 10 or 15 years? Or do the roots of the problems go further back?
So one of the points I make in my book, a piece of Wall Street history that has been completely overlooked, was that in 1970, which I was alive for, but maybe not so many people listening were, a firm, a very highly regarded firm named Donaldson Lufkin Jenrette, decided to flout Wall Street rules, the New York Stock Exchange rules, and decided to go public. Before that, for the first, 200 years before that, Wall Street was a series of undercapitalized private companies, partnerships, where individual partners had their capital invested. Well, DLJ in 1970 decided to go public, and that changed Wall Street forever. And meanwhile, of course, the whole country was focused on Vietnam and the Vietnam War and didn't even notice that DLJ did this.
And you worked on Wall Street for 17 years. How did things change in that time, and how have they since?
Well, I started my Wall Street career first at GE Capital and then at Lazard, which was a private partnership. And it was owned by Michel Davidvay, and I've written a book about Lazard, and it was a fascinating place. But his mantra was, you know, this is my money, and we're not going to take undue risks with my money. So Lazard was just in the business of advising on mergers and acquisitions deals. And obviously Wall Street writ large is very different from that.
But laws were changed, and it allowed Wall Street to change its practices.
Well, the laws were changed after Wall Street had already changed its practices to make de facto what was already going on.
In the years before 2008, several prominent economists like Nobel laureate Robert Lucas claimed that something like the crisis could no longer happen. So do experts understand less than they think they do? You were mentioning politicians not understanding.
Yeah, I mean, there was that time when people were talking about the economic cycles are over and we don't have to worry about that anymore. Yes, I think a lot of people don't understand how Wall Street works. And I don't even think that some of the people, you know, in my book about Bear Stearns, House of Cards, I spent a lot of time interviewing Jimmy Cain, who was the CEO of Bear Stearns before it went down. And I don't think he understood the risk that Bear Stearns was taking. And that's in large part because these firms got too big, were using other people's money, and individual partners, individual leaders of these firms no longer had their capital at risk. So they were sort of indifferent to the risks that were actually being taken.
According to some polling, public animosity towards banks and financial institutions rose to the highest levels since the decades following the Great Recession. What's your sense of public opinion now? Well, have things abated at all? Or when we start hearing about things like the Wells Fargo scandal or some of the others,
just when you think it's safe to go into the water, out comes the Wells Fargo scandal. Look, I don't think people know what to believe. And again, that's another reason I wrote this book, is because they don't know whether Wall Street is a source of good or a source of evil. Most people, are afraid to sort of ask at this point about what Wall Street's all about. It's sort of like, this is everything you wanted to know about Wall Street, but we're too afraid to ask kind of thing. Look, I think we have to remember that, and this isn't about having toys. This is about having, our fundamental way of life. And it's not just our way of life. Capitalism is the ism that runs the world now. And so it's about how capital gets allocated to people who want it and need it to build businesses and grow businesses and to hire more people and to provide the goods and services that, frankly, we take for granted. And that's worth remembering.
Do people distrust the institutions or the people who are heading them?
Well, I think that it's a big black box. Wall Street does itself no favors by not explaining itself better. And I think, after the financial crisis in 2008, where we bailed out Wall Street, probably for many of the right reasons, although still controversial, then Wall Street, instead of paying the penalty themselves in their pocketbooks where it might hurt, they got big bonuses. So they got bailed out and they got big bonuses. And then politicians started exploiting, and they didn't get prosecuted by the Justice Department, which they should have. And into that vacuum came ambitious politicians. And so and they just demagogued the issue of what Wall Street's all about.
The big bonuses felt like they were just rubbing it in.
Absolutely.
Haven't people always been leery of banks? May 17th will mark the 225th anniversary of the New York Stock Exchange. And when he was on our show recently, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse noted that growing banks troubled Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and others even then. Is banking always going to be a particularly sensitive area of the economy, especially with politicians?
Well, I mean, Alexander Hamilton started the Bank of New York. He started a bank in Philadelphia. I think we were revering Alexander Hamilton these days. But the answer is yes, of course. I mean, banks are so important to our way of life. There's just no getting around it. I call them the left ventricle of capitalism. And how can we fail to educate ourselves about something that is so important as banking and Wall Street? I mean, literally, our way of life would not be possible without banking. And I think our founding fathers knew that and kind of encouraged it. New York used to be the capital of the United States. And because we had a financial crisis after the Revolutionary War, we all know now, thanks to Hamilton the musical, that the capital of the United States had to move to the swamp in Washington. So
Philadelphia in between.
Philadelphia in between while they were building Washington. So, we've always had financial crises, and that's one of the things I tried to explain in the book. And we've always sort of recognized the need to get out of them and get over them so we can get back to the business of providing capital to people who need it and want it. That does not mean that Wall Street doesn't make mistakes, and they should also be prosecuted for those mistakes, which is a big mistake that the Justice Department made under Obama, I think.
My guest is William D. Cohen, whose latest book is Why Wall Street Matters. It's published by Random House. We'll continue our conversation after this. We're back with William D. Cohen, who is the New York Times bestselling author of The Price of Silence, Money and Power, House of Cards, and The Last Tycoon, which won the 2007 Financial Times Goldman Sachs Business Book of the Year Award. His latest is Why Wall Street Matters. It is published by Random House. And the caller asks, can you give us a few key points that would help us to understand how Wall Street does work? Are there just a few key points?
Sure there are.
Okay.
It's not that hard. Wall Street wants it to be hard and complicated, so, you know, it'd be mysterious. But the essential point of what Wall Street does is it takes money from people who have it, people who put it into banks in their checking account or their savings account. They take that money, and then they efficiently lend it out or invest it lend it to people who want to borrow it at a fair price so they can grow their businesses or start a business or build a business, plant new plant and equipment, hire more people, pay them higher wages, innovate products. I mean, there obviously would be no Google or AT&T without Wall Street. It has a long history of financing all these companies. And again, it's not just about toys. It's about the food that we eat and the cars that we drive and the gasoline that we put into those cars, as well as the innovations related to solar power or electric power.
But right now, the stock market is booming, and some people saying beyond reason that we may even be entering another bubble. The reason generally being given is that there are expectations that there'll be a lot of deregulation in the new administration. So on the one hand, we have this very reasonable process that you were describing. On the other hand, we have something else totally different going on.
Well, okay, so there are many parts of Wall Street. And again, I try to explain a lot of these parts. But so one thing is what banks actually do, which is, you know, take money from people who have it, capital from people who have it, and lend it out to people who want it. Then there are, you know, taking companies public and the stock market. There's also a private, there's a big bond market, which is three times the size of the stock market. And that's the way sort of capital gets allocated, and we can buy and sell stocks. I mean, can you imagine if you couldn't buy and sell, if you wanted to buy a share of GE, you couldn't do that? Wall Street facilitates that, and that's a very important thing. We now in a period since Donald Trump was elected when animal spirits, as Jamie Dimon talks about, have been unleashed. Yes, we seem to be getting ahead of ourselves in the market. Yes.
Along these lines, recently on Morning Joe, you said, Wall Street is the engine of our economy, the engine of the world's economy. But wouldn't most economists say that demand is the engine of any economy?
Well, I mean, I'm not an economist, so, you know, economists are another group of people who like to speak in riddles and mysteries. My view is that Wall Street is the left ventricle of capital. In other words, that's what's the engine that's pumping the capital around like
blood.
And
some people worry that it matters too much, actually.
Yes, there are a lot of people who don't like Wall Street, and Wall Street does itself no favors. I mean, I honestly can't believe I'm being put in the position of defending Wall Street. I mean, that's the last thing I wanted to do.
Well, but you do say Why Wall Street Matters on the cover of your book.
And that's why I felt that I needed to do this. It's sort of a counterintuitive approach that I felt that I needed to take, given all the demagoguery going on about the issue.
Well, nowadays, isn't the concern well, for example, in the light of what happened at Wells Fargo, Countrywide, other scandals, shouldn't we distrust banks in much the same way that we distrust a car salesman? We know we need them, but we can't always tell what's going on under the hood.
Well, and it's absolutely true. I mean, I think Wall Street's a little bit more important than car salesmen, and we should educate ourselves a little bit more than we educate ourselves about how an engine works. You can drive a car without knowing how an engine works, and I suppose you can interact with Wall Street without knowing how it works, and most people don't know how it works, but I think we would do better by educating ourselves so we can have a fact-based debate.
Are some financial institutions too big to fail?
Look, one of the things, arguments I make in the book is if we're going to go, you know, again, with the rules and regulations off and Donald Trump is going to, you know, start taking the seatbelts off and the speed limits off and let Wall Street run wild again. There should be a grand bargain where, once again, Wall Street senior executives need to have their full net worth on the line and have their pocketbooks really at risk for the things that they do. It can't be any more acceptable, as happened in 2008, where you socialized the risks and privatized the gains on Wall Street, and that has to end.
Do we understand that Wall Street matters even if we don't admit it? We're using credit cards. The Treasury Department has a division that attends to financial threats. And finance has been used as a tool of our foreign policy.
Absolutely. We don't even realize how important Wall Street is to our daily lives. I mean, you know, we just go to the supermarket and we buy the food that we want without giving it a second thought of how it got there.
Has globalization affected the sheer size of financial companies? Can a financial firm avoid U.S. regulation by moving abroad and maintaining its American businesses?
Well, I mean, you're sort of talking about incorporating in foreign lands to avoid taxes, which I find reprehensible.
Some non-financial companies like Apple are making money nowadays through purely financial means.
And Apple has $160 billion of cash or something. Of course, it's making money on its money. You know, if you have capital, it's a fabulous system. But I think that we need to recognize how intricate Wall Street is and finance is to our daily lives, whether we want to admit it or not.
How well is the government monitoring or regulating what's happening in finance?
Well, again, one of the big mysteries of the financial crisis is why the Obama Justice Department did not, and Preet Bharara in particular, as the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, did not prosecute Wall Street wrongdoing. And so that was a big mistake.
People said it was Eric Holder's decision, and Preet Bharara was simply doing what the boss wanted.
That's probably right. He was the author of the Holder Doctrine, who said that, you know, we have to be careful about prosecuting corporations or else they might go all out of business, as what happened with Arthur Anderson. But then we have people who've been head of the SEC who have also been intricately involved with Wall Street and Wall Street representation, including the Jay Clayton, who's the new who's recommended to be head of the SEC, and he's been at Sullivan & Cromwell for a long time, where he's represented Goldman Sachs, and his wife works at Goldman Sachs. So we've had much too much revolving door between Washington and Wall Street, and therefore I think by and large there hasn't been enough aggressive prosecution and enforcement of the rules.
My guess is William D. Cohen, who is not just an author of books but also a special correspondent at Vanity Fair, and he writes a biweekly opinion column in the New York Times. His latest is a book called Why Wall Street Matters. It's published by Random House. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How effective was the government's legislative response to the crisis or the recession, especially Dodd-Frank, the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2009?
I think it created a lot of unintended consequences. When Glass-Steagall was made a law in 1933, 1934, it was 35 pages long. The portion that separated, that mandated the separation of investment banking from commercial banking, was 3 pages long. Dodd-Frank is 850 pages long. There have been 20,000 plus pages of regulations and rules written since then. We're not even done writing all those rules. The acting head of the SEC has put a stop to that now. I think we've created, thrown a lot of sand into the gears of the beautiful machine that is Wall Street capitalism.
And many people feel that it was the repeal of Glass-Steagall that started us along this problematic road.
Right. I don't happen to agree with that.
You thought Glass-Steagall wasn't that people say
the crisis
it was?
It served its time and its purpose, but Wall Street is much more complex since those days, and the clients that it serves are global, and you need to have the capital wherewithal to serve them on a global basis. But if you look at what actually happened, as I've researched extensively, what the causes of the financial crisis, it had nothing to do with the Glass-Steagall banks, the banks that were getting into investment banking. It was more the investment banks who had the trouble, not the commercial banks that were in investment banking.
Weren't the bailouts for Wall Street firms and the auto industry separate from reform legislation?
Yes, they were. They happened well before. I mean, that all happened, and you know, at the height of the crisis, at the end of the Bush administration in 2008, and ratified by the Obama administration in early 2009. Dodd-Frank legislation was 2010.
And we've been told by conservatives that regulation is really slowing the economy. But hasn't the economy been growing well? In fact, Trump administration is taking credit for
Trump administration will take credit for anything that you dangle in front of it, including job numbers that it probably had nothing to do with. Look, I'm not an economist, but let's take one who I think is fairly highly reputable, and that's Larry Summers. Former Treasury Secretary, head of the National Economic Council, former president of Harvard, who said that we've been condemned to sort of secular stagnation, 2% GDP growth, and the last year GDP growth was 1.9%. Trump has given a lot of talk about how it's going to be 3 or 4%. I think we're far from that, and part of the reason is there's sand in the gears of the whole lending machine, and people, there's so much, again, disinformation about this. People think, oh, no, that's not true. The GEs of the world and the Blackstone groups of the world have no problem getting all the capital they need, but the small and medium-sized businesses have a lot of trouble getting the capital they need to grow.
A listener has called in to take issue with your comment that people should educate themselves about financial matters. Wall Street doesn't want people to know about the special derivatives, so it would take a great deal of education, this listener says.
Well, I hate to be self-serving here, but if you read my book, which is written in understandable prose, it's relatively short, especially for a William Cohen book, I think you will get the picture pretty quickly. And of course, Wall Street doesn't want you to know what's going on. That's how they preserve their specialness and their high compensation.
Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has said, I'm quoting, "There is no evidence that more regulation makes things better. The most highly regulated industry in America is commercial banking, and that didn't save those institutions from making terrible decisions." How effective has regulation on Wall Street been?
Look, I think we're at a crucial moment here where Wall Street has to, again, have skin in the game. For the first 200-plus years of Wall Street's existence, again, it was a series of private partnerships where partners had their own capital at risk. And when DLJ went public in 1970 and all the other firms afterwards went public, that changed the dynamic where people were rewarded to take big risks with other people's money. That needs to stop. And Donald Trump needs to make this grand bargain. The dealmaker-in-chief down in Washington should say to Wall Street, look, we'll take these regulations off. We'll let this machine work more smoothly. In exchange, you need to have more skin in the game.
Well, don't they have skin in the game? Several officials in the Trump administration come from finance. Wilbur Ross, Stephen Bannon, Gary Cohn, Steve Mnuchin, Carl Icahn. Is there any indication what direction they would like financial policy to go into?
Yes, they want less regulation. They want the seatbelts and speed limits taken off and people to be able to drive their Ferraris on the wrong side of the road with a whiskey bottle in their hand. But that's not acceptable because that hurts the American people. We need to have them have real skin in the game, again, in their pocketbooks where it hurts.
So in the few minutes that we still have left to us, what do you think should be done?
So I have been long an advocate, as a graduate of the Lazard School of Investment Banking, that having partners have real economic interest in what goes wrong. And you're not going to have, these are all public companies now, so you need to take the top 500 people at each of these firms and give creditors and shareholders a first lien against their assets so that if they do something wrong, that they can have the creditors can go after them. And so one of the problems I found at Bear Stearns is that the top management had already taken out so much money that it didn't matter what happened at the firm if the firm went down the tubes. And obviously, they didn't want it to go down the tubes, but they weren't paying enough attention to the decisions they were making.
Economists talk about internalizing externalities. Are you suggesting that Wall Street executives need to have more at stake if they're going to avoid some of the mistakes that they've made in recent years?
That's absolutely what I am suggesting. And not just saying, I have, $500 million in J.P. Morgan stock. You have to have everything that Jamie Dimon, his entire net worth has to be on the line.
Are executives who make tens of millions or more each year returning that much value to the economy? Why are they paid so much?
I can't explain why they're paid so much. I think one of the reasons they're paid so much is there's so much money sloshing around Wall Street that they take their little slice and it ends up to be a lot of money. There's no question they should not be as paid as much as they are. Teachers should be paid more. Construction workers should be paid more. Social workers should be paid more. It's not right, but they also can't be paid all this money and then be playing around and get rewarded for taking risks with other people's money and not their own.
During your Morning Joe interview, Mika Brzezinski noted the rise in the stock market, saying that retirement savings increase with it. But don't many people lose those gains and the fees that the investment managers charge?
Well, they can lose money with fees, yes. And obviously, if you go to like a no-load fund, and I hear I don't want to give investment advice, but obviously you go to a fund without fees, you're going to, and the market goes up, you'll end up making a lot more money than if you pay an advisor and he takes your his money out with your fees.
Aren't most of the people who are writing regulations in Washington lawyers? Could they do better if they knew more about economics or knew more if they'd come out of Wall Street?
Well, one of the suggestions that's made in the book is that there should be an apprenticeship program, that people who work on Wall Street should have a year of going into Washington at the SEC or the Fed, and so they can educate the people at the SEC and the Fed with the latest sort of quote-unquote intellectual technology that exists on Wall Street, so they can help them write the rules and regulations that actually apply and make the system work better rather than just sort of throwing sand in the gears and gumming it all up.
A lot of people complain about the revolving door aspect of government. On the other hand, you seem to be suggesting that it may have a positive side if people go through that revolving door with some knowledge of the thing that they're going to be regulating.
Well, going back to how this all began with the Antonio Weiss story, to just blanket say you can't be in Washington because you worked on Wall Street is ridiculous and, dare I say, discriminatory, although no one's going to feel sorry for anybody who works on Wall Street. But the fact of the matter is these are complex agencies. They're complex engines of the way everything works, and you need somebody who understands the capital markets to be there.
On the other hand, it's understandable that people are suspicious of people who might very well be trying to do things that will just help them and their friends.
Exactly. We live in a complicated world, but I think more knowledge is better than less knowledge.
William D. Cohen, his latest book is Why Wall Street Matters. It's published by Random House. As always, thank you so much for being on our show.
Great to be here.